Is abortion a right or is it a crime? To the surprise of many, this question has been a live one in much of America since 2022, when the Supreme Court struck down the landmark Roe v. Wade decision that had established a federal constitutional right to the procedure. What this means for the present and future of women's health care is taken up in the new book, Undue Burden, Life and Death Decisions in Post-Roe America, by Shefali Luthra. Shefali is a journalist who has covered national health policy for the past decade, most recently at The 19th, a nonprofit news organization with a mission to empower women. Shefali's work has also appeared in The New York Times, The Washington Post, NPR, and other publications. Here she is to share five of her key insights.
Number one, the fall of Roe has affected every state in America, even those that protect the right to abortion. Since Roe v. Wade fell in June 2022, abortion has been made illegal or heavily restricted in 21 states, but the impacts extend to virtually every state in the country. That's in part because of how fragile the American reproductive healthcare network already was. With clinics shuttering in states with bans, pregnant people have crisscrossed the country to find abortions elsewhere, as I reported in Undue Burden. That's meant longer wait times for abortions, sometimes multiple weeks for an appointment. And it's fewer physicians with the bandwidth to provide other forms of healthcare too. Pap smears, colposcopies, contraception, just to name a few. As more bans and stricter bans take effect, the burdens on the system will only grow, and more people will feel the impact. The fall of Roe has also emboldened the anti-abortion movement to develop strategies for federal abortion restrictions. That could mean national bans on certain medications used for abortion and for miscarriage treatment. It could also mean resuscitating an 1873 law to outlaw abortion entirely. And those kinds of bans would overrule any state-specific abortion protections. Number two. Even before the Supreme Court struck down Roe v. Wade, the right to an abortion was already a right in name only in much of America. Even when Roe was intact, many states had worked hard to undercut abortion rights. In Mississippi, only one clinic in Jackson provided the procedure, and only up to 16 weeks. Anti-abortion centers, taxpayer-funded, usually religious organizations that rely on inaccurate information to discourage people from ending their pregnancies, vastly outnumbered abortion clinics. Federal dollars were not allowed to be used to fund abortion. In most states, Medicaid, the insurance program for low-income people, didn't cover the procedure, which at its cheapest could cost several hundred dollars. And more than 10 months before Roe fell, Texas, the second biggest state in the country, enacted a law that functionally outlawed abortions for anyone later than 6 weeks of pregnancy. The law, which took effect September 1st, 2021, made the procedure unattainable at a point early enough that people often did not even know they were pregnant. The writing on the wall was clear. Someday soon, Roe v. Wade would be overturned. Number three. Though their impact is universal, abortion bans are making us a more unequal society. We know that abortion bans have a widespread impact. Pregnancy is too ubiquitous, and complications can develop regardless of race, class, or geography. But abortion bans are also making us a more unequal country. It takes money, time, and support to travel out of state for medical care. Many Americans don't have those resources. Data shows us that most people who seek abortions are already parents. They are most often Black and Latina, and they largely seek abortions for economic reasons. There is research showing that when people with lower incomes are denied abortions, they are likely to sink further into poverty. In Undue Burden, I examine how this is playing out post-Dobbs, who has the means to overcome these laws, and who doesn't. One woman, Darlene, can afford to fly to California for some of the country's best medical care. Angela, a young woman in San Antonio, uses virtually every penny she has just to travel one state west for an abortion. Tiff, a teenager who lives near Houston, doesn't have the resources to leave Texas or even order abortion pills online. Instead, she gives birth to a son before turning 20. 4. Compromise 15-week abortion bans, often touted by some conservatives, have no medical basis. 15-week bans have been floated as a purportedly moderate restriction on abortion cutoffs in states like Florida, Arizona, and Virginia, and even on a national level. But a 15-week restriction still represents a huge loss of abortion rights compared to what Roe guaranteed. Doctors note that there is no medical reason to deny someone an abortion after 15 weeks of pregnancy. At that point of pregnancy, a patient can still experience miscarriage. And though most abortions happen before 15 weeks, there are people who seek care at and after that point. Some may not have realized they were pregnant, especially if they historically haven't had regular periods. Patients who face more barriers toward getting abortions, they needed to wait for another paycheck or until they had enough time off work or had secured childcare, are also more often pushed closer to and sometimes past the 15-week mark before they're able to get an appointment. Number 5. The rollback of reproductive rights disproportionately affects women, but they aren't the only ones harmed. This is true on multiple levels. The first, most basic one: women aren't the only people who can get pregnant. Non-binary people and transgender men can as well. They too can need abortions and now can face tremendous obstacles in getting them. Many abortion clinics have historically also provided gender-affirming care. The newfound pressure on abortion clinics, especially in states where the procedure remains legal, means some have been forced to stop offering other services, including gender-affirming care. It's made that service even more difficult to come by. States that restrict abortion rights are also more likely to restrict other forms of health care, and in particular, to limit access to gender-affirming care. These state limitations, such as restricting access for minors, barring insurance from covering it, mirror the same laws used to undercut abortion access even when Roe was law. Like with abortion restrictions, proponents of these laws say they are to protect patients, despite advocating for regulations that run afoul of all medical evidence. By the end of Undue Burden, it is clear efforts to restrict abortion and gender-affirming care are part of a larger strategy to control how Americans inhabit and express gender and to undercut their reproductive autonomy at large.
Thank you, Shefali. That was 5 key insights from Undue Burden: Life and Death Decisions in Post-Roe America by Shefali Luthra. I'm Michael Kovnat. Thanks for listening.